From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The vegetable garden is starting to provide in earnest, but before we all dish up the same old side of steamed broccoli or green beans or kale every night from here to the first freeze, it's time to get some recipe ideas that are as fresh as those veggies. That's the topic today, but first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
What do you say we all make this the year of the more inspired approach to eating our vegetables? To that end, I called friend and cookbook author Alana Chernilla, whose latest volume is Eating from the Ground Up, Recipes for Simple, Perfect Vegetables. Welcome, Alana. I'm so glad you could take the time to join me again and give us some help.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love coming on the show
with you. Yeah, inspiration. We're looking for inspiration. If I steam,
don't we all need it?
If I steam one more side of some kind of green thing.
Exactly.
I've got that mastered. So I should tell everybody before we get started, just a little housekeeping, that we'll have a book giveaway with the illustrated transcript on awaytogarden.com, so they can look for that. But, you know, I kind of smiled. I read in the book, I believe, that you say on your computer, or no, maybe it was on your blog, on eatingfromthegroundup.com, I think you said you refer to the book on your computer hard drive or whatever as the vegetable book. So this is indeed the vegetable book, right?
That was my hope, and I've been waiting to write this one for years, so I'm excited that the vegetable book is finally here.
Yeah, and it was your tenure working at a farmer's market in the Berkshires of Massachusetts, where we both kind of, I live adjacent to that in New York State. That sort of germinated the idea for this book, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was really my time at the farmer's market that got me started writing about food in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my third book, but, you know, it was over 10 years ago I started working at the market, and I was just working as a, I started as a working member for Indian Line Farm in South Egremont, Massachusetts, and I was at the market needing to figure out how to talk with people about what they would do with what they were buying. So it was like, well, what do you do with broccoli, Rob? And how would you deal with this radish? And that was really, that was the moment when I realized that in all of the different things I was doing in my life, you know, talking about vegetables and talking about recipes was like making me all buzzy, you know? It was a real revelation, and I didn't really know what to do with it, but I started writing a blog, which I called Eating from the Ground Up, and that was back in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, those writings turned into my first book, The Homemade Pantry, but really what I wanted to write all along was a book about simple vegetable recipes, because that was really the most exciting thing for me. So it just took me a couple of books to get there.
Right.
But now I'm here.
So I think in the book it also explains that I think your sort of provenance, your family history goes back even farther with vegetables, in the sense that I think your grandparents owned a vegetarian B&B. Did I make that up?
They did. Yeah, that was how my family came to the Berkshires in the first place.
Okay.
They bought this amazing old, totally disheveled building in Great Barrington, I think I want to say it was in maybe 1976.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was back when natural foods was really beginning to have its heyday.
Mm-hmm.
And they renovated the building and opened a vegetarian bed and breakfast. They called it the Turning Point Inn.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where I got my start in the kitchen, because I would come up and spend the weekends with them and help my grandmother make the zucchini bread or, you know, this or that. They had a huge garden out back, and that was where they sourced a lot of the food for their breakfasts. And people would come from all over the country because it was such a rare thing, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, that was definitely a big part of what made me who I am, although I'm not a vegetarian, but I have been at certain times, but I do love vegetables.
Well, right around the same time as they did that, I stopped eating meat and fish and chicken and all that kind of stuff. And so I've been a vegetarian that long. And so I love vegetables. Obviously, I eat a lot of them. But I think a lot of people sort of crinkle their nose at the idea still. And actually, I have a niece that isn't crazy about vegetables, even though she's a grown woman now. And, you know, I'm surprised because the rest of my family does. But could you, you know, a lot of people seem to sort of have this habit of suffering through them. How can we kind of, I mean, I feel like this book is about almost like saying, no, you don't have to suffer through them. They can be special, but they don't have to be complicated.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, I agree with you. I think, you know, it's sort of just a cultural habit that we suffer through vegetables, like all of those things that are good for us. You mm-hmm. know, we suffer through meditation. We suffer through exercise. You know, it's like,
yes.
It's like all these things that are great
point.
And
good
can
point.
Be wonderful in themselves. We're sort of like, oh, now I have to like put down the ice cream and do that. So it's funny. I think it's a bit of a cultural habit. And I also just, you know, I feel like a lot of it also has come about through the cookbook and food media world, constantly talking about how to hide vegetables, how to blend them into smoothies, how to pretend they're noodles, you know, just assuming that nobody actually wants to enjoy a cabbage for a cabbage sake, you know,
yes.
like it's just the fact that these foods are really, really delicious. And, you know, sure, maybe if you had canned green beans your whole childhood, maybe you think a green bean is not delicious, but all you need to do is just eat some fresh green beans that have just been steamed with or, you know, sautéed with some toasted almonds and brown butter. And, you know, then you can see what a green bean can really be. So I think that a lot of it is learning the ways to really make, you know, the beauty in that vegetable thing simply, not in a way that has to be super chef-y or complicated, but like there are ways to bring out the best in vegetables. And I feel like also, you know, every person has their few recipes that they do really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like someone might be really great at roasting cauliflower
mm-hmm.
or, you know, you have those things that you fall back on the weeknight and you know you can do it and you can serve it along with anything. But most people don't have all of the tricks at once. You
right.
just have a few. And then maybe you'll go to someone's house and say, like, how did you roast these potatoes? This is amazing.
So let's,
I tried to bring them together.
Yeah. So I, one of the funny anecdotes in the book, and I should say to people, this is a cookbook that you can cook from, of course, but I like to dip into, and this is true with all of your work, because you love to write, and your writing, I love your writing. And
oh,
I love
you.
To dip into the, you know, the head notes, as we would call them at the beginning, the little preface to each recipe. Yours are sort of like these little stories, and I love that. So we can just dip in and read in this cookbook, too. And there are some anecdotes there that are just what you just said, like, what is the secret to the best roasted potatoes? You know, who's
right.
got it? Who's got it and where can we get it?
It should be accessible for everyone. And the answer to that question is my friend Flavio,
mm-hmm.
who actually owns Six Depot Coffee here in the Berkshires.
Yes.
And he's the one who taught me how to really roast a potato.
Okay, let us know because we need it.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, in that case, the trick, which I'll give you the little secret that's in the book, which is that you steam them first and then you roast them.
You steam them first. So we have a potato and it's sort of like a new potato kind of a potato or a
Yukon
Gold.
Sure, any kind
or
of, right,
kind.
Yeah, that's delicious.
Okay.
You know, or a new potato, whatever, you know, whatever you have. And you prepare it, so you cut it up like you would want it. And then you steam it in a steamer basket, so you're cooking it through.
Oh.
And then you lay those steamed potatoes on your roasting pan, and then you add your olive oil and your salt, and then you roast them at high heat. So you don't have to, that roast doesn't have to cook the potato all the way through. It's just giving it that amazing golden, crunchy deliciousness.
Okay.
But it's already cooked. So you've got that, like, creamy inside, roasty deliciousness, and like the texture, it totally changes when you do those two steps. And it took me years to ask him, like, why do I love your roasted potatoes so much more than I love anybody else's or my own, you know?
And there's in one of the, as I said, head notes of the recipes, there's one for beets. And, you know, I love beets. And there's one that I think is like the perfect way to roast a beet, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's the story. That has a little when that's the one moment where Julia Child makes a little entrance into my story.
I guess
not
appearance.
On a personal level.
Okay.
But that I love that. I love that recipe, but I also love how I came to it, which is that my friend Jane, who lives here in the Berkshires, and she is an amazing gardener and also an incredible cook. So I've learned a lot from her. But she told me a story years ago that, you know, she was out in her garden and a car drives up, and who gets out of the car but Julia Child? And she's, you know, she's in her gardening clothes, and she's digging in the garden, and it turns out that, you know, she's the kind of gardener that, as I know you know how this is, that people really want to stop by and see her garden.
Yes.
And Julia Child had been visiting friends, and who had said, "Oh, Julia, you've got to see this woman's garden. It's just, it's a pretty humble little vegetable garden, but it."
It's very productive,
you know,
yes.
Oh, so productive and just so kind of enchanted. You know, when you walk into a garden that's really been producing for so many years, you can feel it, and it just feels like a magical place. And so I totally understand. So she gets out, and Jane's working on the beets, and Julia says, "Well, I'll tell you, the only way to make a beet," and proceeds to give her recipe, which Jane shared with me, and I was really excited to be able to put in this book, just because it's such a great story.
And how do we roast a beet? Yeah, how do we roast a beet?
So the instructions that she gave were to go high heat in a covered container. So really, you know, what that means is to, you know, you can do it with the skins on, and you just put them in a any kind of container that you can top with a lid or you can top with foil. But the key is that you add some balsamic vinegar.
Yes.
On the beets. And you can also add a little red wine if you have some open. And that acidity just like deepens the flavor of that roasted beet. And you
mm-hmm.
roast it, of course, it varies depending on the size of the beet. They can be so little or so big. But you roast it, you know, anywhere. I think it's between half an hour and an hour, and then the skin should come right off, and then you have these really rich and sweet, wonderful roasted beets.
Mm.
Yeah, so you, good.
And in this book, I mean, there's, you know, like there's everything from like how to cook, how to eat a radish. I mean, that was one of the first things I think that you were asked in the infancy of your career at the farmer's market. It was like,
yes.
What do I do with these radishes? Because in recent years, like very unusual, flashy, beautiful, big radishes, you know, like the Christmas, what is it? What's the one, the Christmas?
There's like the watermelon radishes.
Watermelon, right.
Yes,
right,
those
right,
beautiful
right,
ones,
that,
yeah.
You know, they have all these beautiful names and beautiful colors inside, and yet, what do I do with that thing? But
yes.
You have, I think, a roasted radish recipe in the book.
Yes, and I have several radish recipes
yeah.
because I love radishes, yeah.
But I think a lot of people are like, well, a radish, you know, you get a slice of it in a salad or you, like, dip it in a dip, you know, and that's the end of radish. That's radish 101 for most of us. But that's not the
yeah.
case, right?
It's true. And I think especially with now, you know, so many people having farmers markets available to them, you know, people get seduced by the beauty of those big pile of radishes and they bring them home and it's like, okay, like, as you said, you know, you slice up one in a salad and then what are you going to do? But My favorite thing to do with radishes, I have a few different pathways in the book, but my favorite is to chop it up and to stir it into butter,
oh.
Of course. Who can blame me?
One of the four food groups, butter.
Exactly. and so if it gets chopped up and stirred into softened butter with maybe a few fresh herbs, you know, you can snip a few chives or a little parsley, a little lemon zest, it's really quite amazing.
So that's compound butter to use as like a spread, so to speak?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And
mm-hmm.
the nice thing about a compound butter is that, you know, when you're stirring things into it, you have no choice but to just layer it on thick.
Right.
So, there's like nothing like a slice of good bread with radish butter
right.
on it. It's just, and it's also a decent way to preserve radishes because you could freeze it. You know, you can make a compound butter and roll it up into a little roll and then put it in the freezer. And, you know, that's a nice thing to do and be able to
for
pull it
a party,
out later
for instance.
On.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
any, you know, putting anything in it. I like to put edible flowers or, you know, any sort of herb into compound butter. So that is a lovely thing to do with radishes. But I also do love to roast them.
Right.
And I have a recipe in the book where I roast them, and then I create a sauce, a really simple sauce of mint and feta and some lemon. And I just, I like to puddle that sauce on the plate and then just put the roasted radishes over it, which I think, it turns them into something totally different. You know, you get this kind of juicy inside and caramelized outside.
Quite the opposite of a fresh radish, which can be sharp and crunchy, right?
Yeah, there's no bitterness or sharpness or usually any heat to it either.
Right.
I often suggest that for people who feel like radishes are just too much for them.
Yeah.
Is to try that because they're just, it's like a totally different vegetable. It's really lovely.
I mean, the first sort of full chapter after the introduction, I think it's called Barely Recipes. Is that right? Did I make that up? No, I think it's called Barely
totally
Recipes.
Right.
And it's full of such ideas. So, where, again, it's not, as the title of the book says, this is not complicated stuff, but this makes all the difference. These little twists and turns make all the difference. So there's sort of the joys of you're sort of extolling the virtues of taking those extra few minutes to make like the sauce or the dressing, or you just talked about the feta and mint one for those roasted radishes, what could be easier. But it changes it up. So you have your a reprise of your yummy sauce from a previous book, I believe. Yummy Sauce, great title. And it has nutritional yeast in it, which is an ingredient people may not even know about. Now, I love to use it on I bake tofu with like ginger and garlic and, you know, toasted sesame oil or whatever, slabs. And, you know, and then I like to have it as my topping. You know, I make something with some nutritional yeast. I don't think people even buy it. I don't even think people know what it is.
No, it's really still a very new ingredient for people, which is, you know, I was raised on nutritional yeast because it was a big food in the sort of hippie.
It was a hippie thing, honey.
Yeah. And it's really, you know, it's high in B vitamins and all those things. So it has all sorts of virtues. But it's really a fantastic popcorn topping, which is really how I came, you know, how I came to know it. That was what we put on our popcorn when I was a kid. And so, yeah, nutritional yeast, people put it in smoothies. I mean, people do all sorts of weird things with it. But when you stir it into a sauce, you know, yummy sauce, which is actually comes from a little cookbook that my mother and her coworkers created in maybe like 1981 or something, working in a New Age center kitchen as she did. They made all these recipes, which I think were really just Molly Katzen ripoffs. But this recipe was, they called it yummy sauce. So I can't take credit for that name, but I had to pass it along because it's, you know, it's so simple. It's just nutritional yeast, butter, tamari or soy sauce, and garlic, all sort of just boiled together for a minute.
Exactly.
And it makes this like salty, almost like gravy.
But it has a umami
cheesy,
thing.
Delicious.
It has a
super umami.
Umami thing going on. And that's the thing about nutritional yeast. If people don't know about it, you can buy it usually in bulk in the, you know, where you get your rice and your beans and stuff, like in a co-op or food, you know, that part of the market where you get beans and rice and stuff. And you can just buy a small amount for a small amount of money and taste it. You know, you don't have to get like a giant, massive amount of it.
No, I've never met anyone who doesn't like it when they taste it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like kind of tastes like cheese.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
And so there's yummy sauce and nutritional yeast and what that does to the flavor. And then you mentioned before like a little brown butter maybe and some chopped nuts. I think maybe you mentioned that about green beans, or I read about that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, the green beans. Or, you know, I have a greens recipe where it's sort of your standard, like quick braised sauteed greens, but then I stir in miso at the end.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Miso is another thing that, you know, so which one do I, okay, so I haven't been using miso in a million years since the old hippie days, and so should I get the sort of yellowish blonde looking ones or the real world dark, or what?
Well, the nice thing about these recipes that use meat, because I do have miso coming up a few times in the book, I think it's a really useful thing to have in the kitchen. And it also, it's so versatile and it lasts forever in your fridge. So it's a nice, and the nice thing is that, you know, they're, all these recipes are really, will work with any of those different kinds of misos. You just have to learn about essentially with miso, the darker it is, the more intense the flavor.
Yes.
So a white miso is going to have this sort of mellowness to it. And then the darker you get, the more flavor it, you have. But there is actually a local miso to us around here. It's called South River Miso, mm-hmm. I think. So it comes out of Conway, Mass. And I think it's available through a lot of the country at this point because it's really a phenomenal product. And they are doing all these beautiful, like, dandelion leek miso, and they're really, you know, stretching the boundaries of mm-hmm. what's going in there. And the nice thing about when you add miso to something like Simple Greens is that if you're using a good miso, if you're using something that has other flavors in it, those are also going to come through in your dish and really embellish it. And so it's nice to play. I mean, I can use, you know, you can get sort of the most basic, inexpensive miso that's just, you know, often I'll get miso at the Asian market. And,
right.
And that works wonderfully, too. But it's a nice moment to sort of search out other products and make use of them there because you're really going to be able to taste it. And
yeah.
And it's just lovely. Miso and vegetables, it's just such a nice combination.
So we have maybe 3 minutes left, and I just sort of want to talk about, you know, what, so if I'm going to try to spice up my life, make my enliven my vegetables a little bit, what are some of the, so we've talked about a couple of ingredients that you use again and again, mm-hmm. and then mint, for instance, I think dill is something that you advocate in a number of
yes.
places. What else do we want to bring into the kitchen and try with some of these, with some of our vegetables? Any other pairings you want to shout out?
You know, acid and fat are
okay.
just magic with vegetables. And so, but I think it's really nice to go think outside the box with both of those categories.
Mm-hmm.
So with acid, we think about vinegar, we think about lemon, and those are really good. Those are good tools to have. You know, there are very few vegetables which don't benefit from a nice little squeeze of lemon. But in addition, you can have other things that have acid qualities like buttermilk.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Or even like Parmesan cheese, which
yes.
which has a real acidity to it. It sort of adds a like funkiness to what you're making. And often, even if it's not something that you think about putting cheese in, a good grating of Parmesan right at the end, you won't even know that that's what's there, but it's going to deepen the flavor and
yes.
give you that loveliness. And so I think, you know, having a good hunk of real like Parmigiano Reggiano, which is available pretty much everywhere
yes.
these days, it's a really worthwhile ingredient to invest in, and you don't need much because it's so good.
Mm.
So I think, like, thinking beyond those bounds or, you know, when you're thinking about fat, that so often we use olive oil, but really using butter, which can coat greens in a different way.
It does really, doesn't it? And I tend to use a little bit of it, but it changes the whole thing.
Exactly.
It
adds a silkiness.
It does.
And it's just good to just play around with and mix them. Use a little olive oil, use a little butter, or play around with coconut oil, which I use some in the book too, when a coconut flavor is welcome there. Because all these fats, they're really going to give different textures and qualities. And I think, you know, vegetables, they just have so much to say when you give them the right tools and sort of prop them up. So having that right fat and acid, it takes it from that sort of regular Tuesday night broccoli to something really amazing.
Mm. Well, I love the book, Eating from the Ground Up, Recipes for Simple, Perfect Vegetables. As I said, we'll have a book giveaway. And you mentioned it real briefly earlier that you're a cabbage lover. You alluded to it. And you have this crazy recipe where you not only get cabbage in it, red cabbage in this case, but also celery, another overlooked vegetable. Maybe we'll share that recipe with people
transcript. That's a nice, simple one.
Because that's
yeah.
very unexpected. So thank you so much for making the time, as I said at the beginning. It's so nice to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love the show, and I love talking with you.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden or instagram.com/awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.